Good morning. Welcome to Talking in Stations. Great to be here with you guys. Today we have a very special show. We have a CCP guest with us today. Elise, are you as excited as I am?
I am super excited to see a whole bunch of CCP people on the show. And, you know, it's one of my favorite things to do, which is talk about things that we've already done.
Amen. Amen. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Elise Randolph, my co-host. I'm Carneros from The Bastion, your host. And then we've got with us, we got two guys on camera and one guy on audio. So let's start with the camera on the left. Please say hello to everyone, CCP Convict.
Hello, everyone, and I apologize that I'm the one with the camera.
No way. And in the middle, we've got CCP Dopamine.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks very much for having me again.
Great, excellent. It gives them a chance to associate your voice with your name. And then on the bottom right, we have CCP Spider.
Hey, everybody. Sorry for the lack of camera today. I can guarantee it's for your own good.
Nice. All right. Well, welcome. Welcome. Today, we're going to take a look at 2019. What year is this again? From the perspective of CCP us together. So we have a list of things that we did this year. And we're going to go through it one at a time a little bit and talk about each.
Was it a list of naughty things or a list of nice things?
Yes.
Yes. I think it gets progressively naughtier as we go later in the year, but I might be projecting. All right, let's start with the fact that our current expansion, in the old terminology, back when we had boxed retail product and stuff, our first expansion is in EVE Online Invasion. And in fact, we have EVE Online Invasion Part 1 and Part 2, which came out in two progressive sets of content waves. We're currently on Invasion Part 2.
Yeah, the crazy triangle people, as we all like to call them, have, you know, invaded New Eden and completely shaken up how our Capsuleers go about their day-to-day life.
It's not just the Triglavian invasions in HiSec that some of you will associate immediately with invasion, but there were other aspects too. It's worth remembering that a lot of effort went into the new player experience this year. A lot of work, a lot of difficult refinements that took a lot of care and effort. And if you're a new player, you probably saw it, unless you went right to HiSec like a hardcore crazy person. If you're an old player, you probably didn't see it. But nevertheless, there's an iceberg of work that went into the new player experience this year.
And you guys just had a discussion on the show, I think, a couple of weeks ago with some people from that team. I know CCP Wonderboy was there, CCP Priyobrzezinski. I can never pronounce that right. And who was the third guest you had on that episode? It escapes me now. But at any rate, yes, you guys covered that. There was a lot of work done on the NP this year. And with the chapter two of the invasion, but it feels to me more like it's actually chapter three of the actual Triglavian story, because beginning with Into the Abyss, where we introduced you guys to them through the Dead Space filaments, we started to go poke around in their space. And then beginning with chapter one of Invasion this year, they decided they had enough of us poking our noses in where it wasn't wanted and decided to come and check out what was happening in New Eden.
That was definitely an unexpected turn of events to see Triglavian invading other locations in space. I definitely have been enjoying it myself. I think it's the aesthetic side of Triglavians, it's something that I really dig myself. So I would really like to have more of it everywhere I go.
And it's not the only place where the Triglavians invaded or where there were invasions. You guys actually invaded all of the world with mini FanFest type events that, you know, just ended with the London. But I know, obviously, Dopamine, you've gone to all of them, and Convict, you've been to probably a good half of them, starting from Sydney. What was that like?
I don't think we have enough time on the show to actually do a deep dive on the world tour and everything that we learn from it and everything that we take out of it. If I were to say in brief, it's been an absolutely wild year, you know, expanding from having just a few events to having like, what is it, 8 events across the year, with, you know, full production, full team support, simply enhancing and amplifying the work of the local organizers, just allowing them to do better the things they've been doing so far, has been extremely rewarding. And for my side in particular, since I'm still fairly new to the team and I started working on EVE Online, you know, at the end of the last year, it has been a great time to go all around the globe, meet the people and different communities and the local communities, especially from different locations, and just get to know like what are you guys doing? You know, who's the most prominent community member there? All the different content creators and as well even organizers. It's been absolutely great, but at the same time, it's been extremely exhausting, man.
Yeah, I just picking up from that, like I was at EVE Down Under, but not as a developer then. I during EVE Down Under this year, I had been hired by CCP, but was just still in the process. So it was kind of surreal going to that event, which I've been to so many times as a player and having to sort of like keep it quiet. Then after I finally arrived in Iceland, the first weekend I was here, basically they're like, you're going to Finland. I'm like, okay, no worries, off I go. And then after that it was Germany and Vegas and then London, and then surprise, they stuck Korea in the middle. So even though that wasn't technically part of the world tour, that trip snuck in too. So it's basically a different country every month for the first 3 months, 3.5 months that I was at CCP. And I have no idea how guys like Dopamine who did the entire tour end to end managed with it, because although it like, don't get me wrong, it was exhilarating. I did have a lot of fun getting out there and meeting the players and you know, presenting myself to the community, I guess, as a developer now and talking to them in that context. When we got off the plane from London, there was a tangible sense of relief that I could just sort of stay home for the next couple of weekends.
Yeah, and it was actually really interesting. I went to EVE North and EVE Vegas, obviously never gonna miss that. And you know, the people in Toronto were super excited to have an event like hit on their soil. I mean, obviously they have player driven events, but this was the first like CCP one that came there. And I swear at least half the people there were new people. They had never gone to an EVE event before. And talking to a lot of other people that went to other events, they said, yeah, that ratio holds about true. It seems like half the people that went to one of these events, this was their first time, and now they're addicted for life. So they're going to be following around the circus wherever it leads them.
You're right, and that was the point, man. Like getting more devs than ever before out on the ground at these player gatherings, helping to put them over the top. I think you mentioned Toronto there, for example. I think Toronto, when it was just EVE North, was pulling just a little bit over 100 people, but then all of a sudden when we took the investment that we'd normally put into FanFest every year and spread it around to these other communities, they got something like 400 this year, which is crazy. And I'm hoping that a lot of that will hold over to next year when things just sort of like go back to being normal player gatherings, and they'll see like an increased baseline of attendance from that. And then of course, now that we'll have FanFest in Iceland again, I knew this even before I came to the company, but there are so many people at CCP who don't get to go on the road, who don't get invited onto talk shows like this, who work super hard on the game and are really passionate about it. And normally for them, FanFest is that one time a year that they get to have that direct player engagement. And I know a lot of them missed it this year. So hopefully next year they'll be able to be happy again with FanFest in Iceland. And the players who were motivated to participate in EVE events this year, thanks to the World Tour, will stick around and keep going to those events, even if we're only going to be sending, you know, 3 or 4 developers instead of, you know, 15 or 20 next time.
I think the Cathy Assay story, where, you know, the capsuleer, as we covered on Talking Stations, and I'm sure you've heard about, who went to every EVE Online system and also didn't die, and also every wormhole system. That story had just broken probably a few weeks before, or just a month before EVE Toronto, and we got word that Katia was going to Toronto. And he was kind of like, I got to meet him face to face, one of the coolest guys ever. And I was like, you know, you're going to be a rock star here, right? And he goes, no, there's no way. And I think my favorite thing was CCB Burger and CCB Fozzie were just smiling ear to ear, just like almost jumping for joy like little kids when they got to meet Katya for the first time. It was so surreal. And like you were saying, CCB Convict, it's not just the players, but it's also the developers that got to mix in really well.
And I can associate with that story because when I met him at Vegas and I was talking to him for about 5 minutes before I realized who he was. And I was like, you're Catch a Say? And it's like, I couldn't get my phone out fast enough for a selfie when I realized who I was talking to.
If you've never been to an EVE meetup like one of these, it is not what you expect. It is much more. You will be blown away. It's really, really cool. And it is. It's kind of addictive. You're going to want to go every time. So keep that in mind. You think, okay, there's going to be some jerk, someone I shot a few too many times, someone I mouthed off to in local, someone. None of that matters. Even if that person shows up and is sitting next to you, you will be giggling and drinking beer or something together by the end of the show, and it will change your life.
They're normally the ones you have the best interactions with, in a way, because you've got sort of like shared that moment, and you know, just a couple of friendly jibes turns into a night, just sort of at the pub sharing stories and things like that. It's fantastic. I've been to 5 fan fests and 5 Vegases now, and I can, you know, obviously with the exception of 1 Vegas as a player, I've never had a negative experience with another EVE player. It's been overwhelmingly positive, and in particular with those people that you share some kind of like a rivalry or some sort of shared history with, because you can build a relationship off of that, and it's fantastic.
I mean, like at FanFest, like even as a developer, like when I was a GM back in the day, I had a player approach me at FanFest, and he was like, hey, are you CCB Spider? And I'm like, oh boy, what did I do? And it turns out that I had not given him his shit back, and he just said like, hey, I'm sorry I was being a dick to you in that ticket. Can I buy you a beer? And I was like, okay, this is not how I expected that to go.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, CCP Spider used to be a GM like CCP Guard. So he's following in famous footsteps, you might say. Welcome to the team, bro.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, so... yeah, what all happened to the community team in 2019? You guys have been rebuilding, and it's great to see what's happening here.
Yeah, so we're going through a little bit of a change, as you can see. The community team is actually completely new, if you put that into consideration. But, you know, we have me, we have Convic as well. We're finalizing at the last stages of the hiring for the 3rd community developer who should be joining us in the next few months or so. So right now we're trying to set very strong foundations in those areas that we want to be dedicating our resources for the next year to make sure that we can start the year super strong and utilize the talent that we have internally to make sure that we can give back at least a little bit of love to the EVE Online community, who is always showering us with compliments and great stories and feedback and you know.
So you know who the new team member is going to be, and you can't say it yet? Is that what's going on?
Yes, not everything has been finalized just yet, so we're going to have to wait a little bit longer before we can make the official announcement.
All right. Secrets are part of the fun in EVE. We'll go with that. But yeah, excellent. And you know, not to jump back again to the EVE World Tour. Actually, yeah, let's go back ahead to the EVE World Tour for a moment, because I kind of jumped us around too much. Sorry. I've had a lot of coffee this morning and I'm in a great mood. Your secret plan worked, and you split EVE Vegas into EVE Vegas and EVE San Diego, two events. And you only have to, well, no, you have to work on both, but you get a lot of help with one of them. Brilliant.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, yeah, we were when we decided to move from Vegas to San Diego, it was just about sort of breaking some new ground. And we know there is a super high concentration of EVE players in Southern California. So it kind of made sense to try something there. Unfortunately, we wouldn't have had the resources to do both. So we shifted our focus to SoCal. And because Vegas has been around for such a long time, it started as a play-run event. In the beginning, I think it was Zapperwerk from the Goons who created that event and built upon that before CCP got involved when we wanted to do a Northern American player gathering as well. It's like, well, you know, why reinvent the wheel when there's already this, like, you know, fantastic event? So we kind of, I wouldn't say took it over. We stepped in alongside the Zapperwerk to organize that. And then it did sort of eventually evolve into a primarily a big CCP event. And yeah, like the community has got such a long association with that. And like I've been to it a bunch of times as well as a player and had a fantastic time there. I totally understand the connection that exists with it. And I don't know if it was a secret plan per se, but it is a happy outcome that the players are so connected to Vegas that they're determined to have their own player gathering there. And we will throw our support behind that 100% as well. So as a consequence, rather than losing an event, you guys have actually gained an extra event. Now you have two major player gatherings in North America next year, one in San Diego and one in Las Vegas.
Like Killboard's green, as they say. But yeah, so for those that are maybe forgot, this year's eVegas was the last official CCP-sponsored eVegas. It is going back to a player gathering, which, you know, we've been assured by some player organizers that, yeah, don't worry, it's not going anywhere. It's going to be a player event for the foreseeable future. And then there's going to be a CCP-sponsored event that will be moving to San Diego. And then after San Diego, it's going to be rotating around as well. So it's not going to be always in San Diego. But yeah, next year it'll be in San Diego. And I know when the news broke, people were like, oh no, Vegas, now we're going to lose Vegas. But then after talking to like a little bit more cooler heads, I think the response turned to, yeah, I was always afraid to take my family to Vegas. So, or not afraid, but hesitant to. Like, I don't like sitting in smoke-filled rooms. Not really one for gambling. And so a lot of people were also, you know, as CCP Convict was saying, really happy about breaking new ground in a place that's, you know, in a densely populated area. And lots of fun for potentially new people to get addicted to EVE meets.
I really wanted to check out the USS Midway Museum because I'm a massive War of the Pacific nerd. So I might even organize a special side trip for EVE players who want to go and check that.
And Mitani loved that side tour. He had a great time on there. Yeah. I would hope you guys would consider New Orleans for a future event. I think that would be hella fun. Although it suffers from the same I can't bring my family to it problem that Las Vegas has, maybe, but it's still I would personally enjoy it as a.
I think so, it'd be really cool.
I've got great news. Great news for both of you. There is a player event or a player gathering that is starting in 2020 in New Orleans. Of all places, I believe Delania from Pandemic Horde is one of the organizers behind it, and she's got a few more people working at her behalf. There is a... Yes, exactly. And there's also a... I believe there's an official Twitter for EVE New Orleans as the player event. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I'll look for it, throw it in the chat, and we'll throw it up on the podcast notes as well.
Someone in chat is saying EVE NOLA New Orleans... May 22nd to 24th. That's promising. Wait, when? That's like a month after EVE FanFest in Reykjavik. Is that right?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. And by the way, will you guys still be in the old building at the time of FanFest, or will you have moved to the new building yet, meaning CCP?
So the current plan is that we will move the office in February. Hopefully nothing will change. And then, yes, it would very likely mean we're already going to be in the new building, in the new location. Maybe we can organize some office tours for some of the lucky FanFest attendees.
I vote for that. That would be fantastic. I haven't seen the new office.
We've toured the site just sort of through various stages of construction, and from like a hole in the ground to like a concrete shell. And pretty much every couple of weeks now, someone from our office goes down there just to get an update and takes a few snaps and circulates them. And it's really starting to come together. I think the data slipped a couple of times just due to, you know, weather and that sort of stuff, because building anything in Iceland's, you know, outdoors is a bit of a gamble, but it is actually really coming together, and it looks as though that February date might actually be the one this time. So I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't got like a strong sentimental attachment to this office yet, because I've only been working there for a couple of months, but the new place is going to be very, very modern, very, very breezy, and the entire company basically is all going to be occupying one enormous floor instead of split over like three floors where we are now. So it should make it easy, much easier to get around, catch up with the people that you need to catch up with, and those sorts of things.
Yeah, Conrad, I can tell you, you're definitely not going to get any, like, I have worked at the old office now for like almost 8 years, and I can tell you, like, I am super excited to get out of that building.
Someday you have to get them to take you downtown to the old office.
I haven't been there, but I don't know what it is now, but I think I've walked past it on the street a few times. You That's the one that is just down the road from Noni?
No, it's farther up, but it's at Klapparstigur and Loyavir.
Did you know that Noni's is closed down now?
Yeah, I did know that. That's tragic. Sad.
Oh, we still got Hollowbatar.
I mean, does that really even count? But yeah, as the news that Nani's was closing, I think every Eve player that has ever played the game, it would starting to message me on Steam. They're like, "Can you believe this bullshit?" Blah, blah. Like, these people have they've got families. They can't put too much time into Eve Online anymore, and just that pops up on their newsfeed, and they just get outraged.
and you're pretty sure that their arch rivals all over at Hollowbatar all had a big party that night.
Just for anyone watching,
champagne.
It doesn't get the reference. So in Reykjavik, there's these two like sandwich bars. One's called Nonny's, and one's Hollowbatar. They've got this sort of like you say it. Thank you. And they've got this rivalry. It's kind of like, was it like Pat's and Gino's with the cheesesteaks in Philadelphia? And everyone has like a loyalty to one or the other. And I'm pretty sure the Nonny's is closed down now, but I'm kind of relieved, because I'm pretty sure the only way to solve this once and for all would be with like a Gangs of New York style showdown in the middle of Lagavaga.
We should do like food wars. Absolutely.
Get impaled with a sub.
Oh, just to follow up on the Eve New Orleans, Matterall did give the dates. But the Twitter handle that I was mentioning that you can find all the information for is twitter.com/Orleans_E. I put it in the chat so you can check it out. You know, it's just a player event. Maybe in a few years, CCP will bring it on as one of their own as well. And I'm sure they'll send a few people, if not just some cardboard cutouts. Because it'll be like twisting people's arms to get them to go to New Orleans, I'm sure.
Nice. I added them. Thank you. Very helpful. Yay.
But Eve 2019 wasn't all about player gatherings, although it did feel that way because it was so much fun to watch. There are also a lot of changes to the game that, you know, maybe you weren't really thinking of. I know when we were kind of compiling our list, we glanced over definitely the biggest one, the most life-changing change to EVE Online that has come probably in the last 5 or 6 years that CCP Convict had to remind us of. The 64-bit client happened this year, guys.
Amen. Amen. The technological advances this year. Fantastic. Amazing. We all live with it. It's part of our daily lives now, that 64-bit client. How did we live without this?
I know, right? It's been a long time coming, something I've wanted to do for a long time at CCP. What blew me away was how quickly it all sort of came along. The 64-bit client, when it was released as a beta, was working so well out of the box, and we had some outrageous number, like 90% of people opting in to use the 64-bit client, which obviously expedited the trial process of it before it became a fully implemented feature and became like the default experience. But having access to all that extra memory has helped a lot in like big fleet fights and people who are multi-boxing and those kinds of things. So we've seen that reward. And I think it's just awesome that it demonstrates that CCP is committed to continuing to invest in EVE by developing the underlying technology that supports the game, which is obviously a huge motivation for the product.
And it also opens up a lot of new possibilities for us that now we can try to improve other areas within our tech. Because before, not having the 64-bit client was basically a roadblock that we could not have overcome.
Yeah, like after seeing the success with the 64-bit client, I know that the team is like shifting their focus on DX12. I mean, that's like the next big hurdle they want to cross.
And of course, the players, as soon as we got the 64-bit client, we decided to all fight each other to see how we can break that client now. So, you know, the wars got bigger. You didn't have to go to potato mode to, as EVE players call it, which is, you know, reducing all your settings down to the lowest to enter a fleet fight. Now you can enter like a pretty good sized fleet fight with all the effects on. It's visually stunning. You know, if you really are into space battles or if you just want to be a neutral observer, you can go out to a place where you know there's going to be a fight, cloak around and zoom out. It is super beautiful.
I mean, if it's magnificent, so you should be able to enjoy it in all its glory.
I remember when we would try to live stream these big fleets and we would have to send two or three reporters in cloaked interceptors to try to, so that when the first one disconnected, the stream could shift to the second one because it would be so crazy in those systems. And now with the 64-bit client, you don't see that happening anymore. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it definitely has done a lot for us in for fleet fights with client stability, because one of the bottlenecks we identified was just memory issues. You know, having a 32-bit being capped at some 3.7 gigabytes of RAM usage per application, it just wasn't feasible.
And the client wasn't the only thing we've been working on. Obviously, the recent experiment with no downtime has also been done in an attempt to see if we can, you know, improve of the life of the Capsuleers on a daily basis.
That was something I was like in the meeting when they said we're going to skip downtime on Wednesday. I was like, I don't know. I was looking at my phone or doing something. And I was like, we're going to what? Because I played this game for 15 years in the Australian time zone, and like the downtime thing became such a big meme for us. You know, there wouldn't be an Eve Down Under with a dev on the stage during an AMA where someone wouldn't be like, so when are you guys going to get rid of downtime? Or can you at least move downtime a few hours earlier? And all these kinds of things. So it became like a big kind of bugbear for that community there. And just the prospect of CCP finally being able to do something about that just by skipping it for one day is an obvious indicator that they need to see what breaks so they can make some changes. So I was super excited about that, perhaps more than most people, because there would be people in the US time zone who've probably never even seen that pop up, you know, while they're in the middle of playing the game, because for them it's at like 4 a.m. or something like that. But it can be kind of disruptive to your gameplay style. So anything we can do to either eliminate or reduce the frequency of downtime, if it only goes to a couple of times a week or maybe just, you know, once a week or something like that, will be a huge, huge improvement. But we probably have a few more experiments like this we have to do in the future. And we know that by leaving the server running past its bedtime, did create some interesting issues. We saw problems with structures anchoring. We saw mineral depletion in some areas. So we saw some chat issues, rear their heads and those kinds of things, which is obviously inconvenient for players. But isolated experiments like this help us gather so much data so that we can start to address these issues and work through them. So there might be a couple more tests like this coming down the line and might cause a little bit of consternation here and there while the servers are a bit fruity as we're letting them stay up past their bedtime. But we hope you guys will be patient with that, because the end result will obviously be a significant improvement to the quality of life for a lot of people who play EVE.
And, you know, you guys, you mentioned, because being for the longest time an Australian time zone player, you get to see that pop up all the time. Playing in the U.S. on the East Coast, I hardly ever saw it unless I was like just completely addicted. Even I couldn't tear myself away or doing a big op or something. But another group of players that the no downtime experiment is going to be beneficial for are the Korean players, who in 2019 Korea just got their localized client not too long ago. You guys actually went to G-Star when it was announced. CCB Dopamine kind of hinted at that earlier as like another stop in the invasion tour. And as a result, we got to see a massive influx of Koreans coming to EVE Online, and it has been one of the coolest things to watch from afar. Obviously, language barrier for me, so I don't get to interact with the Koreans all that much. But I have been watching their streams. I've been watching what they do, and they are having a blast with EVE Online. It reminds me so much of when EVE players like Brave Newbies started coming in, and before that, Test Alliance. Just some guys that are relatively new, but love explosions. So they'll undock in like 100 frigates and just Zerg rush something. And watching Korean streams has been
a perfect metaphor.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just really glad that the way the EVE Online server takes work. So, the superior Korean APM will not make me irrelevant in EVE Online. So thank goodness for that. But yeah, that has been a huge thing, and it has been adopted to really, really well.
Yeah, the uptake has been huge. They're now the Korean players, I think, are like now the third or fourth largest just like group in the game, if you want to draw some arbitrary borders around groups of players. It's pretty massive. Like at any given time, I just had a quick glance then, like currently two out of the top 10 EVE streamers are both Korean streams, but it's not unusual to look at that on EVE Online and see like three or even four streamers in the top 10. And if Funzinu's streaming, he's usually number one. He has a massive following. We saw an incredible response to EVE when we were at G-Star. We had a massive booth. The queue was full from open to close every single day. We put something like 2,000 people through the tutorial and the character creation process, and then they left with their sort of like newbie invitation starter code if they wanted to pick up the game and start playing it. And there's been a big push in the company to throw some more support behind them. We've recruited some Korean ISDs to help out in the rookie help channels, and we've got some Korean GMs on the way early next year to handle their tickets and things like that. We were actually caught a little bit by surprise just how strong the adoption of the game was there. So we've had to play catch up a little bit, but in some ways it's a nice problem to have because it's a massive shot in the arm, and particularly in a time zone in an area of the world where things are typically a lot quieter. So higher player numbers in that wedge of the world will carry over content coming from the east and like feeding into like the Pacific time zone as well.
Yeah, even even talking to stations, we had to adapt to that a little bit too. So we have now a Korean localized channel as well for people to talk about that on our Discord. Sorry, Karnaris, what were you saying?
Yeah, if you haven't heard of G-Star before, it is a very big deal. It is the big annual game convention in Korea, much like E3 kind of is in the U.S. It's actually a bigger deal in Korea than E3 is in America. It's a big deal show. And here is CCP with Hilmar on a keynote and a big booth and a lot of support and a lot of attention. It was a fantastic little launch there. My compliments.
Thank you. It went absolutely wonderfully.
Okay, what came after that? Let's see. Here's some little fun things. You guys put the EVE music on Spotify.
Oh, yeah. I know there are some people at the company who are extremely pleased to see that finally go through. There's one in our publishing department that she was just all smiles that day that went live.
Some of the engineers I know like to listen to the music on headphones while they're working, which I think is really cool. And they let Spotify.
It's that space ambient thing that's like super relaxing. You can have it on as background noise. It doesn't distract you while you're like smashing out lines and lines of code. I'm also super happy to see them show up on Spotify. People have been asking it for a really long time. It is a bit more complex from a licensing standpoint to get music onto Spotify rather than just, say, uploading it to SoundCloud, for example, which is why this process has taken so long. I think there's only 11 or 12 tracks, some of the earliest ones that have been released on Spotify so far, but we will continue to add other Eve music in batches over the coming year. So it should actually develop into a fairly comprehensive library.
All right. And then another thing you guys did is Age of Chaos. So this was, this was a surprising development at the time. I remember we, being in a fleet up in Tribute / Vale of the Silent, running around mostly shooting unoccupied structures, but suddenly someone's shooting our structures back home, and we're looking to see who it is, and it's no one we've ever seen before. So we're having quick conferences in autocrat channels and things, and comparing notes with each other, and turning around, and the call came through: turn around, stop what you're doing, head back to Delph. We have to go. And, in the meantime, we've got our few people with gunning rights on citadels running back and forth as fast as they can, trying to gun these things. And our logistics guys are suddenly trying to pull bombs out of factories as fast as they can and move them around to restock all the structures. Oh, and that one's not fit? You idiot. We have to have a fit on the structure. Things like that. It was very dramatic at the time. Did you know it would be like that?
I don't think we fully were able to predict the how players are going to react and what's going to be the outcome of this. I think partially it was why we've decided to try and shake things up a little bit. It in some of the situations, I think a lot of items actually worked out very well, and it was beyond our expectations. There were a couple of things that, in hindsight, we would have done better, but that definitely showed us that there is a potential, and EVE Online, community is very receptive to this type of, regular and frequent and also sudden changes being implemented into the game.
Yeah, we definitely, for the last 6 months now, we have learned a lot from these changes we've been making. And like CCP Dopamine said, we see what works, what doesn't. Just for example, the blackout gave us just some empirical data, so to speak, to work with on local and just how intel works in the game. It's been a pretty wild ride, and the Chaos era seems to be continuing with just different changes coming in unexpected ways.
So when you guys talk about learning a lot from Blackout and the Chaos era, I think it's really evident that you guys did, because at least for where I'm standing, the new filaments that are coming in for that you guys are in right now, that are login rewards and stuff like that. Basically, what EVE Online players call them is Edafleet. They're a little filament similar to an Abyssal filament, but instead of sending you to Abyssal's dead space, it'll take you and your fleet members up to, I believe it's 20, to a random system in Nullsec. So you guys can, you can be basing in Nullsec and say, hey, you know what, tonight, Friday night, I want to just go out with my friends and just go and try and kill some Nullsec people. So you activate this little filament, you go through, and you get yeeted off to a random area of space that's very often populated, right? It's not just always like a dead random corner. There's some magic algorithms working behind the scenes. And you'll end up in Quirius or Delve or Syndicate or something like that. You go out, have a fight, you'll generally run into another fleet. And, from the people I'm talking to, they're saying, this is exactly the type of content that I loved from Blackout. And the Nullsec people are like, yeah, I like this way better than not knowing when anything was coming. I'm not terrified to go outside in space and die to some unknown assailants. So it's really, really fun for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's got the randomness for the people roaming, but without existential dread. If you're just out to sort of mine some roids or farm some anoms or something, you can still get killed, but at least you you'll have perfect intel up until the point that a bunch of guys land on you and shoot you in the face. And I think the largest filament is actually 25. If you've got the Rudolph filament, you can go that high if you want. But yeah, it's like 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 that can drag you out. I had a play around with them last week as well, just internally with some guys from CCP, and that was a bunch of fun. And just the other night, On Friday, we did two CCP winter dev caravans with Bjorn B FCing us, which was live streamed on Twitch. We went out in the morning at 0900 and then the evening at 2000. And we used those filaments to yeet us around New Eden, and we got into some amazing fights. If you want, you should go on the CCP Twitch channel, look at the past broadcasts, and just check out the second fight in particular from the 2000 fleet. There was the CCP fleet consisting of us and GMs and ISDs, and there was two or three other fleets that all showed up to brawl, and we went for like an hour straight. It was fantastic.
Now, was it who was FCing on your side? Who was your FC on the CCP side? We promised not to headshot.
FCing us on stream, so you can headshot him all you want. He was in a monitor, so like you know he could take a pounding. But it was good. I died. At least I died once in the morning and twice in the evening room. And the loot fairy said yes to the 500 plex that was in my cargo all three times. So hopefully I've made some people very happy and everyone got some nice loot out of it.
I have a feeling there was a grin somewhere that were shooting all the wreck, because that's the quintessential EVE Online thing, right? You know, EVE Online, they do Secret Santa, we do Secret Santa, we do lots of stuff, but we also have a grief miss tradition as well. So there's a little grief miss in there, shooting wreck.
But it's good that you connect the filaments to the blackout in sort of like the chaos sense, because it was like just an unexpected random thing that CCP just dropped in our laps. It wasn't obviously not on the scale of the blackout idea, but it was, you know, just a fun surprise, you know, just like, hey, get ready to be delighted. It was kind of like another thing we did similar to that, which is kind of in the same spirit of some of the things that we're experimenting with, was when we did the trick or treat over Halloween with 100% loot drops for that week. And we did see an appreciable increase in PvP, probably an appreciable increase in ganking as well. But the point is, like, somebody got up that day and there was something fundamentally different about EVE that they weren't expecting, that wasn't there yesterday. And so for the next few days, they get to try some fresh content. And then once the period that we're trialing that expires, people are still feeling good and they can look forward to something else down the pipeline, but they don't know what it's going to be. And then next minute, you know, like Yeta Fleet. So to me, those are the kinds of really fun changes and surprises that we can throw out there for you guys to make what you will of it. And hopefully I'm not going to make any promises, but hopefully we've got a long list of ideas for things that we can keep trying going forward.
And it's then important as well for you guys to be letting us know what are you enjoying more. So we can take it back to the teams and make sure that we're delivering you this type of content that you want and that you know take the most pride actually playing.
Let's try the Halloween week thing on structures for a week or two.
And where's my pen?
Yeah, just send that over to Team Talos right now. Hopefully it'll be in the game tomorrow. There we go.
Just let somebody clip it and we're just gonna send it straight there.
I actually think the Halloween event applied to structures as well.
Oh, it did do, didn't it? I had forgotten that.
Yeah, it absolutely did. A lot of people were all about... Wormhaulers didn't care. They were just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, this is just live.
Yeah. But, you know, some really fun, like the quintessential EVE thing, as CZB Convict was saying. Like, you guys do this Halloween event with 100% loot drop. Obviously, people like Pirate are going to be like jumping up for joy. But some really cool things happened that we actually covered on Talking Stations as well. There is a group called Hog Hitmen that lives out of Heck. And they just decided to war deck every single Corp and Alliance that came through Heck in the previous week. So it ended up being 180 Corps and Alliances. And then they quickly realized, oh no, we might have gotten in over our head because all of the myriad of groups that decided they wanted to work together. And because of this one silly little Halloween event, the largest fight in Heck to ever happen in EVE's like 16-year history happened over a Fortizar with like, I think something like 800 people showing up, almost 100 billion ISK in damage done, including a dead Fortizar. It was a hoot to watch it go down. I was there for the whole thing. I know the Talking Sensations Twitch channel was there. Ron was there covering it as well. Really fun.
It was super cool. And CCP Loki made a really cool scope video about it as well. So yeah. If you haven't seen that, he actually he went around, he interviewed some of the prominent people, some of the FCs from the different fleets that were concerned, did a news report on it in the scope, and he's been using he used our new sort of lip syncing technology that we're developing, so that he took the audio recording of the FCs telling their side of the story and synced it up, so it was their avatar from the game speaking, and I think that is so cool. Needs some more work because it's a little bit dead above the nose, like when characters are talking to you, but it's a great sign of things to come.
And if there's one reason that you watch the video besides the cool tech, it's listening to the in-game, like in-character scope news person say intergalactic space hobos completely straight face.
Right. Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's one of the things that always used to make me laugh about how the whole grimdark thing with Eve. It's like, no, you can't have pig skins, but you can call your alliance internet space hobos.
I know. We've come a long way. In the skins department, too.
Yeah. Oh, the Aurora Universal skins that we're giving out. They look so nice, man. And they're free. You just have to log in and claim them.
And if I'm to understand right, the skins change like during the day, or as the day progresses, like a little bar fills up as you get closer to the 24. I don't know. I don't know how it works.
But that's the Yoyle Festival skin has like a little chart that builds up. And then you get like a little star after on Christmas Day, which lasts to early January and goes away. But it'll start up again next year. The Aurora Universalis skins are just the funky green and purple skins that have the cool wisps of aurorae emanating from them as they fly through space. And you can pick those up just in the launcher.
So fancy.
Yeah, they're easily my favorite skins that have come out recently.
And they're both Icelandic influence, because the first one is inspired by the 13, what do you call the elves, Spider? What do you call the 13
elves? I mean, we call them Yule lads.
The Yule lads.
Like in Icelandic, we just call them Jólasveinar, which literally just means like Santa Clauses, I guess.
Yes, so those are, the Yule lads are the kind of, to me, are the reason for each one of those tum-tum-tum lights that turn on. And in the Aurora Borealis inspired the second skin, another part of Icelandic life. Who knew you were going to space and to Iceland at the same time? So there's another thing to bring up that happened this year, CCP Bible. Which is,
yes.
For those of you, that's kind of a CCP dev term, though. The players don't think of it as much like that. That is the document that governs the behavior of CCP devs playing EVE Online, a live game. Am I saying that right? Am I expressing that the way you see it?
Pretty much, yeah. It's just the rules that govern how we interact with players when we're playing on our non-dev regular player characters.
And that's evolved nicely over the last 10 years, too, I'll point out. Are you three playing secretly in any, don't tell us who, in any EVE Online alliances or corps that we might have heard of?
Maybe.
So I can say that I have one character that is applying in the application process for a corp in an alliance that people have heard of. But then I have four other characters in the game, and they're just my, I just have them kicking around doing exploration, doing mining, not getting associated with any other corporations. They're just like in my little personal thing.
For myself, I'm currently not. I only just got my characters back on Friday afternoon, and I spent pretty much all of yesterday flying around in Tayras, just like gathering stuff up and consolidating all the assets for these five characters, just so that I can be organized before I strike out. I've got a couple of corps that I want to apply to. I'm thinking of applying to two or three different corps just so I can try out different play styles. But I think once I start playing again, because of this new policy change, I don't have to witness protect my main. So I've gotten Bam Stroker back, and I'll be playing as Bam, and at least on one of those characters, at least one of those corporations. And I think he was reasonably well known in EVE, so I think it won't take long before people sort of figure out, oh, okay, so CCP Convict's gone and he's playing with these guys now. But I for one, am super excited about the change, even though it didn't really have a long-lasting impact on me because I'm relatively new. I know there are tons of people at CCP who feel liberated by this and are looking forward to playing in a lot of areas that they probably haven't been able to fully commit themselves to before. It's just a great thing for the company. Oh, and another nice side effect is we're changing sort of the period that the your old EVE characters have to remain frozen from 6 months to 3 months. Which means I could get my characters back. Yeah, which means I could get my characters back as soon as the policy came into effect, because otherwise I wouldn't have been eligible to get them back until February. So this is great.
So for those who are not aware, whenever you get a job at CCP and you play EVE Online before, you need to report all of your characters to Internet Affairs, who then freeze your account for any investigation, and it could take up to 6 months before you would get them back. Right now, that time, as Convic said, has been decreased to 3 months of max.
He makes it sound nice with the word freeze, but the way they do that technically is they ban your characters. So your characters are banned. They are not training. You can't, not only can you not access them, but their training queue is frozen. And when you get them back later, they've made no progress, which is like a little bit frustrating. Not that I'm bitter or anything. Okay, maybe.
So I can also add some further clarification on this. The 6 month period was also kind of like a testing period for the employee to see if they could adapt to the effectively new lifestyle in the game. And Internal Affairs did provide compensation for the missed training time at some flat rate for the 6 months. Now the period has been shortened to 3 months, which also lines up with the just general employee probation period or whatever we call it. And more likely than not, your character won't need to go through any witness protection or any weird stuff like that. That will kind of more affect the people who have already been working at the company, such as myself, for a long time and maybe played with other CCP employees in like a CCP corporation or stuff like that. And obviously we don't want to be inadvertently outing these corporations or fellow CCPers who are playing the game and don't want to be public. So, I mean, that's, for example, what I've done with the one character that I'm going to be joining some alliance with. I just don't want the possible accident to happen.
So this is a big thing. And, you know, as I was on the CSM during CSM 6, which is just around the same time that CCP Rise and CCP Fozzy transitioned from players to game developers. And, you know, one of the things on the CSM that we were talking about at the time was, hey, why do you guys still have this draconian policy in place? Why don't you? And then, of course, Incarna came out, and the players and the community and the players and the devs weren't really on the same page. There's a little bit of hostility there, so they had to table discussions for that going on. But from what I'm aware of, the CCP has always been behind this from even before my time in the CSM, of getting you guys to play and making it so obviously it's not forced, it's optional, so you guys can experience different lifestyles in within the game. You know, just see what it's like on the ground, and you can make some changes without having to do some feedback, because you'll be able to say, hey, this is what life is like, blah, 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 blah. So that is really, really good. We're really happy as players to see you guys back in the game, so we can talk to you about it and, you know, be excited. I will make one stipulation. Players, when these developers enter local, don't ask them to give you stuff. Like, if you do find out who they are, like, don't make them regret making this decision. This is something that we've wanted long and hard, so just don't ruin it.
I mean, if we sort of go into the reasons why the old policy was difficult, made things difficult for us in the dev blog. And also we appeal to the players, you know, like, we're not going to be great, so let us suck. You know, don't come at us if you know that a player, if you've identified a player's account and you see them in a fleet or on comms or something, unless we've got a CCP in front of our name, we're not at work. We're just playing Eve with you guys for fun. So there's already a bunch of ways you can reach out to us with your feedback, and we're always monitoring, engaging with players on Twitter and Reddit and on Discord, and you name it, and at player gatherings to get feedback. So there's plenty of conduits for you guys to get your CCPs back to us. And the other thing, of course, is we're completely forbidden from using any kind of space dev magic at all when we're on our player characters. So if you're up against one of us in an opposing fleet, we're not using any kind of dev hacks or anything like that. It would basically get severe consequences for doing that. So just sort of be chill and leave the tinfoil at home.
Pure skill.
Yeah, and yeah, that's right. And I want to address something which is sort of kind of being the elephant in the room when we've talked about this policy change. A few people, and I'm not afraid to mention it, a few people always mention like the T20 incident from back in the day. I'm not going to go into what the incident was. If you want, you can Google it to find out. But this policy change has in no way made it easier for something like that to happen again. The internal security changes, the oversight and the auditing that was implemented in wake of that is still in place and remains untouched. This is only about our own identity when we're playing the game. So the risk of any malfeasance hasn't increased. It just means now that we can engage with you guys more properly. We don't have to run away if you figure out who we are and, you know, stop what we're doing, change corporations or anything like that. So it's overwhelmingly a positive change for us at the company, and I can only see it having good outcomes when it comes to the ongoing development of EVE Online.
Yeah, I just want to...
Go ahead, Spider.
I just wanted to quickly add on to what Susie B. Convict was saying. Forced anonymity is not going to, in my opinion, be a preventative measure for someone to, you know, do another T20 scandal. So if anything, it removing this is only a positive thing to enable us to play the game. If anyone, you know, in the past would have wanted to do something like this, they, you know, being forced to be anonymous is not going to impact that, in my opinion.
If you are at home listening to the podcast, you can't see the screen right now. But if you are with us in Twitch, or if you're watching the video on demand on YouTube, you can see that you can't see CCP Spider, but you can see that CCP Dopamine and CCP Convict are joining us from home on a Sunday night. So their video camera, you can see they're at home. When you're at home logged in as an EVE player, you're not live on the internal network at CCP. So at least if it's like when I work there, you don't have the ability to turn on those dev hacks. Those are locked to being local on the network at the office or similar on the network of the office. So, I mean, there are probably a couple people who can get around that if they want to, but people are not doing that. These are regular, they're on regular accounts, on regular clients, and they couldn't cheat if they wanted to. And then if they did, internal affairs would be all over them like a cheap suit.
I had to generate some snowballs for the snowball fight last Sunday. And the situation was that a player has an annual snowball fight in Luminaire every year. A few hundred people turn up. It's actually a fun public event. But unfortunately, earlier in that week, we decided to melt all the snowballs that were in the game because we were introducing new snowballs as part of this 13 Days of Eve event. So I get this panic message from the organizers. It's like, dude, I've got 400,000 snowballs and they just all melted. And so I was like, all right, dude, we'll fix this out. We'll make this right. Relax. So I went off internally and I spoke about it internally, and there were these structures there where you could go, you could put in melted snowballs and get a fresh snowball at a 10-to-1 ratio. But the trouble was, you could only do them 10 at a time, and it would have taken this guy like 80,000 clicks or something to do it. So the resolution was, I would be in Luminaire. People could give me their melted snowballs in bulk. I would exchange them for fresh snowballs at a 10-to-1 ratio and hand them back. No problem. But I had to go and get approval from internal affairs in order to use the space magic to create those snowballs in the first place. So My point is, if I have to get approval from IA to make snowballs, like, imagine what's going to be happen. It would happen if I try to make anything more substantial than that.
Yeah. Sensitive topic. But moving on to the next thing, there was a different surprise besides melted snowballs this week. On Tuesday, there was a little quiet patch. And we actually noticed it immediately in my alliance. And people were saying, the anoms are smaller, which I should explain for new players. The anomaly sites that spawn in our space that are for mining come in sizes from, let's see, small, medium, large, enormous, colossal. And people generally tend to go for the largest first for whatever reason, human psychology perhaps. But the colossals, the enormouses and the larges were all smaller than they were the previous week. And they definitely got noticed. And people were like, what's going on? Did you notice anything? And we're talking with each other. And we got a clarification a few days later. Do you want to talk about that?
So basically, if London, we kind of hinted or promised, you can, interpret it however you like it, that we're going to be making changes to the resource distribution in EVE Online. And what you guys have saw on Tuesday is basically the very first step towards trying to tackle this issue that we've identified as something that is simply contributing to the overall stagnation within EVE Online. That's true, we haven't communicated it on that immediately when that happened. But again, sometimes there will be changes made into the game that are fairly subtle that we might want to maybe let you discover it yourself and just tinkle a little bit, among the players and other pilots, if that's really real or if that's a problem. But we're never going to make a change without commenting on that at some point, So very likely, if you see a change happening and there's no confirmation, it's been a bug report within 24 hours or so, that's very likely could have been intended.
If you're a player in HiSec or LowSec or wormholes, and you aren't experiencing this yourself, I'll just tell you what they did. They did two things. They changed the size of the maximum amount of ore that spawns in the three largest size of anomaly. So the large is 2/3 of its previous size. The enormous is half its previous size. And the colossal is 1/3 its previous size, just maximum size. They still respawn later, but they'll respawn again and be a little bit smaller, or a lot smaller. And then the second change they did was they pulled two minerals out of the asteroid belts. With NullSec, no one normally mines the asteroid belts, so this is a sneaky thing. I think it's actually designed to draw your attention away a little bit from the colossal change. And the NullSec pilot can feel smart for a moment because he figures, ha, they changed the asteroid belts and we never mind there. But actually, they know what they're doing. So I think, don't be distracted by the small red herring. That's my opinion. I don't know what you guys think. At least, what was your reaction?
So my reaction, I don't do too much mining, so I'm glad that there is some sort of research resource distribution going in there. I like to see these type of changes. I did have a lot of fun watching and you guys might have missed this one too. It kind of flew under the radar. There is a CCP video that was put out on their YouTube channel that was seasons greetings and resource distribution, which was kind of weird. So you should watch it. It's a short clip. It's like a minute and a half long. It's like all the CCPers at their Christmas party having fun, and then it pans down to CCP Burger, as the Grinch, just destroying asteroids from the server with a pull of a plug. Really, really fun. But, I kind of like these changes just for the random knockoff effects that happen. So the price of Veldspar is just wildly fluctuating in Jita right now. Like, things are going crazy as people are trying to figure out what's going on. You know, the one thing about EVE Online is the players love to be informed. They love to know what's going on, and they love slash hate being surprised as well. So previously, when stuff like this would be coming, the players would see it from miles ahead because it would make it to a test server or something, or it leaks somehow.
Hybo leaks or Singularity, and yeah, those sorts
of things. Yeah, exactly. It would go from, like, someone would pull it from somewhere, and then players would kind of figure out the best response to it before it even hit the live server. And now, as Carneris was saying, like, this thing hit the server, people didn't even know that there was a dev blog up talking about it. They just noticed the change. So you see them adapting in real time. And it allows for some really fun things to happen. Clever people get to make some early ISK. Or maybe even more active people get to make some early ISK as well. So it's really exciting to see changes like this happen.
And it's not solved by the time it actually goes live on Tranquility, which happens to a lot of our features. Like, I just for question for the guys, you know, on the panel and in chat right now, how do you feel? At least mention that, like, players like to have the information. I feel like more so the players are accustomed to having the information already there in advance. Like, I was going through some old dev blogs the other day, and I saw the dev blog that we put out before Thera was introduced into the game, and it is very, very thorough in terms of the number of new shattered wormhole systems, what size ships they can take, that Thera is a thing, how big it is, what stations are in it. Basically, it was a complete blueprint to the feature that was being released. And I think that is handy and informative, but part of me also thinks maybe sometimes, like, imagine you're that guy who, after downtime, scans down a wormhole and jumps into it, and you're like, what the hell is this? And you take screenshots and you put that on Twitter and Reddit, and you're discussing it, and people are just freaking out. Like, why is there a wormhole system with stations in it? Why is it 200 AU wide? Why does it have, like, 50 anoms in it? You know, like, 50 sigs, you know, like... it would be interesting to see that develop in real time. So just, like, generally speaking, what is your guys' opinion on telegraphing information like that versus keeping it a secret?
I mean, at its core, EVE Online is a game where you like surprises, right? And I'm sure you can attest to this, being an older player. There was no manual. We had no idea what the next turn would hold for us early on in the game. And then it did feel like quite formulaic, like, oh, we know this is going to happen. Here's what we're going to respond to. We're like, oh, this ship is going to change. Here's our new fits that people can adopt to instantly on day. So it is nice kind of finding new things. My favorite, Caroline Star. It was just like an event that kind of happened in the game, setting up for wormhole stuff. And one player noticed this, posted about it. And then that player's name was Caroline. And, you know, the star, like the actual piece of EVE Online that we see every day, was named after a player who discovered it. So that's like one of the coolest things you can have.
And just to add on top of it, obviously this is not a completely blanket new approach that we're going to be applying for everything that we add into the game. This is more on a case-by-case basis when we decide if a specific change or a feature. Do we want to communicate on this in advance? Do people need to have the notice period to actually prepare themselves? You know, when we were introducing the Kicking Castles, we knew that, hey, we need to give those information a little bit earlier than usual, because that requires a lot of, you know, adjustment from the player base. But with something like, you know, decreasing the number of resources in anomalies or asteroid belts, you know, that's a feature that perhaps doesn't require you to know a week before, because it doesn't really change that much the way you play.
Well, Thera turned into a massive transportation hub for the game. It changes how you move around in New Eden.
Yeah, it's basically Wormhole Uli from 2004.
It's a, you know, that's a little bit different case than in resource redistribution. I actually... to answer your question, it does, the fact that resource redistribution and resource scarcity is coming in a series of small steps with mystery over a period of time does affect how we play the game, but not at the same level that introducing Ithera does. There are certain kinds of things that we're not doing right now in NullSec because we're waiting to see what falls out of that. For example, I had a corporation come to me this week and say, hey, I'm thinking about approaching these guys to try to buy X moons from them. And I said, they're not going to sell anything right now because everyone's waiting to see what goes on with resource redistribution and resource scarcity. So don't waste your time. Focus on other things for now. You know, there are a couple things like that I think are affected by the system. Not a big deal. Just Eve is such a big interconnected ecosystem. It's like a giant plate of spaghetti. You can't do too much without touching a lot of other things.
And to follow up on CCV Convict's question, a few questions from chat. David Matterall, who is listening, says, I like to know the new toys in advance, things to get excited about. But for changes for advanced players, I think they should be sprung on them, which I think is a really good way to put it. And Crazy Loca mentioned, this ore removal wasn't being because it was so sudden, wasn't taken advantage of by the super rich NullSec financiers. We all got the same shot at mineral prices, which is exactly right. It's a really good take.
But it's fun to see something like the Zernitra in advance, because that's kind of like, oh, look, it's shiny, it's a toy, it's aspirational, it is. It's the kind of thing that you can see it in advance and build an appetite for. It's like an appetizer.
Yeah, and you know, it kind of hit both sides of it too, right? Because we knew what the ship was going to be, we knew how it was going to function, we knew the stats of it, but we didn't know how we were going to be able to get it. So we had to discover, you know, how to get this ship, build it, and have all the resources for it, while still knowing that it was coming. So it kind of hits the best of both worlds there.
Good. Good feedback, team and chat.
We're looking forward to maybe I shouldn't call it Triglavian. What is the word for these?
Precursors.
Yeah. We're looking forward to a precursor supercarrier and a fax and stuff like that. Force Auxiliary.
Precursor Titans win.
I don't know. You want more supers? I don't know. I honestly don't know what's in the pipeline for the future of the Triglavian ship line. But who knows what the future?
They haven't told you all the secrets yet.
I've tried super hard not to discover too much. It was when I started at CCP and I had access to all the internal, wikis and documents. Obviously, there's like big swathes of lore which sort of have the more exposition on what the actual history and the background is. And I started reading through those, but then I kind of just stopped because after wondering for so long, just having all the answers right there was, it felt cheap to read through it that way. And I've had occasions where, CCP's on 3, our cinematics guy would just be in the kitchen talking. He's like, oh, I'm working on this new cinematic. You should come and check it out. And I'll be like, oh yeah, I'll be right there. And I'll take 2 steps and I'll be like, no, wait, I don't actually want to see this until it's finished and I can like watch it, on the screen at, like Eve London with everybody else, and see it for the first time. So I try not to find out too much about what's coming up storyline lore wise, but obviously when it comes to new ships and features and things like that, I stick my nose in wherever I can.
And Pales mentions in chat that, there's an appetite for the angel caps.
The angel caps, yeah, that concept.
We saw the initial concept art and we loved it, yeah. We know that they're not finished and in hiding somewhere in a closet waiting till CCP's in a good mood. There's a lot of work to do, but there's an appetite for those. They're gorgeous.
Yeah, I think this came up in an AMA in London, and as far as I understood it, we have the concept art for the ships. We don't have any 3D models. We don't have anything beyond the pictures we showed. So, it's definitely not a case of us waiting, just holding them back because we want to annoy everyone or anything like that.
No, I don't. Anyway, it's beautiful concept art. So my compliments on the team who made that. Okay, thank you for joining us. We've been going for an hour and 15 minutes, starting to wind down. I do want to mention that in terms of player news, Test Alliance seems to have gotten pretty actively involved in the north. They have moved fleets up. They have started engaging the Dead Coalition. Elise, what do you think of that?
I think it's hilarious, if only because, you know, the main motivation for Test Alliance deciding to move up there and get involved appears to be, if we can take Vili, one of the main fleet commanders and leaders of Test Alliance, if we can take him at his word, it's because him and Sword had a disagreement on the CSM. And so Vili's like, well, the one way to make sure this doesn't happen again is I'm going to remove all of his voters, so we're going to war. And it's just one of those funny type of Eve storylines that you can only get in Eve Online. Like, these two players, they clash, and then they're like, okay, let's fight it out now.
And then the headliner tweeted something, geez, yesterday. It was a picture from a battle up there. And it's funny because he's got Test all with red standings in his screenshot. But from the Imperium side, it looks half the time like Test is joining the Pam-Fam side of the fight. So it's very interesting. I'm wondering if he's trying to influence the narrative a little bit with that screenshot. Very Eve-like.
Very much so. Everything, you know, like these guys do, it's all by design. It's all calculated. I'm not going to go say it's planned at a barbecue, but, you know, it is very deliberate. So that should be a very spicy winter for the north, which is very good for people living in the south. I know the people in Tappy and stuff like that are happy that they're not always fighting a war on their home soil. You know, that war just died down between them and Winter Coalition. So Legacy gets to have some semblance of home without a war zone on their backyard. But they still get the content by deploying north and fighting with Initiative and Dead Coalition and, you know, all these standings. The Blue Donut's getting a little bit purple and mixed up in there.
All right. Have any of our CCP guests had a chance to participate in any of those battles yet?
Sadly, no. Not from my side.
Like I said, I just got my characters back. However, I was looking at a couple of kill reports on Reddit the other day, and I'm like, I'm probably going to be showing up on a couple of these very soon.
Y'all are missing out. You got to come out and join us.
I'm just waiting for my application to be accepted. So if one of the recruiters is listening, then please do it. Please, please.
Where did you apply again, Spider?
That's a super top secret.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have recruiter roles in your corporation or alliance, please go check your queue.
Yeah, don't be some lazy inactive CEO or something like that. Get off your butt, whatever you do.
Yeah. Should have applied to a corporation that has people in it that actually play Eve CCP Spot.
She.
Or at least undock.
All right. It's hard to undock when there's Hypernet Relay stuff going on.
Oh, okay. It's our fault then.
Exactly.
You guys. All right. Well, thank you very much. Great to have you guys join us. Hope you'll come back again in 2020 and be on the show again.
Well, thank you for having us. It's always a pleasure to come around and just have a chat for an hour or so.
Elise, we couldn't do this show without you. Thank you.
Yeah, it's always fun. Always fun. I love, this is the first time I've been at my new computer, which I got around Thanksgiving time. My old computer broke, so I had to use a different computer, and it just didn't feel right. And then last week, we were doing the Invasion World Tour online qualifiers, so unfortunately, I had to miss our talking station. But that was a pretty neat thing that also happened this year.
Yeah. So yeah. We got one more show next week, by the way. Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say thanks for having me and also address the chat and say that I'm not joining NC.
Okay. Yeah, that was Convict starting rumors with his wording. We're watching you, bro. Look,
gotta have some fun.
I like it. But yeah, next week will be the last Talking and Station Sunday show of the year, obviously. And we're excited, so come and join us again next week. And thank you for another episode of Talking and Stations.
Thank you very much.
Please don't disconnect from video yet, though, because we do this little thing with the...
It's like the newsroom where the shot of the lights go down and the anchors at the desk like shuffling paper sort of thing.
And they're probably saying horrible things to one another.
Tell us when...